It is a Thursday morning, the final day of June. We get closer to the 4th of July holiday, and usually we can count on this gentleman for some fireworks. Joining us via the telephone, John Ziegler. Good morning, John.
Good morning to you guys.
Website is framingpaterno.com. Always a pleasure to have John on the show.
No doubt. And, man, there's never a lack of stuff going on and head-scratching stuff at that surrounding this case, John, and some developments last week. Actually, some developments again this week as with all of the various branches of this, but we are nearing a little over a month away now from Jerry Sandusky getting his 3 days in court regarding the Petition for Relief Act.
Well, yeah, there's a lot to talk about, so let's take it one at a time. You know, last time I spoke to you, the 1970s stories had been revealed in part, and I told you and I told others in a column I wrote for a major law website that the 1976 and 1971 stories were obviously bullcrap, and we've learned some things since then that actually have me embarrassed because they are far more bullcrap than I ever imagined. I undersold just how ridiculous the 1970s stories are. Here's what we now know, and this is really, really important, Jeff, because I think the entire case in a rational world, and I mean the entire case, should be collapsing down simply because of these revelations. But, of course, the news media is so blind and so willfully blind, they don't even know, you know, what to look for, if they had the ability to look for it. Here's what we now know. In 1976, we now know who the lawyers of the 1976 accuser who claims that they told Joe Paterno that Jerry Sandusky had sexually abused them. The lawyers are Slade McLaughlin and Michael Bonney. Now, why does that matter? Well, it matters from a number of perspectives. Number one, Michael Bonney was also the lawyer for Aaron Fisher, victim number one in this particular case. Michael Bonney, bizarrely, and I mean bizarrely even by the standards of this incredibly strange case, back in May, not 3-4 years ago, back in May, was quoted as saying he doesn't believe the 1970s accusations against Joe Paterno. I have no idea how in the world that happened and how in the world the media has completely ignored it. Slade McLaughlin became newsworthy in the recent months because Newsweek did an investigation of a client of his in a Catholic Church case in Philadelphia where a client almost identical to Aaron Fisher was found to be a lying piece of crap. So these two lawyers right off the bat make you wonder about the 1976 accusation in a way that is so obviously bullcrap because of the nature of the allegation. The nature of the allegation is that a year before the Second Mile charity starts, Jerry Sandusky abuses a kid at a football camp that he was not running. We now know it was a football camp. Sandusky wasn't running the football camp in 76. Sandusky was a nobody then. That Joe Paterno gets told about it, and then the next year allows Jerry Sandusky in 1977 to start the Second Mile charity with Joe Paterno's approval. Now, if you tried to create a story that was more obviously absurd than that, you'd have a very difficult time, although you might be able to come up with what we now know about the 1971 accusation, Jeff. So I don't know if you want to talk, is there anything else we want to talk about with regard to 1976?
Well, I was just going to say, you know, all of this, it would make you incredulous, except that we know about the 1971 abuse, John, so that's...
Yeah. Right. So let's talk about 1971. You literally could not come up. At least I could not. I don't have a good enough imagination to come up with a story that is more utterly ridiculous and totally obviously absurd than 1971. And people who have listened to our many, many interviews will think that I made this up, because it basically dovetails with everything that we've been talking about for the last several years. So here's what we now know. We, of course, knew because of Sarah Ganim's reporting, and obviously, you know, that interesting that she becomes the person who reported on 1971, you know, on a, you know, back when the 76 allegation comes out a couple months ago. Although she had the story back last year, didn't report it. It's my understanding she had a video interview, which she's never revealed with this guy. That makes it inherently suspicious. Numerous things that she reported, including the guy's age, turned out to be not true. The allegation is just flat out silly and completely inconsistent with every other allegation in this case, including the fact that Jerry Sandusky supposedly picked up a hitchhiker and gave him alcohol and marijuana, which he had in the car with him, which right there, regardless of what you think about Jerry Sandusky, is impossible. And he goes ahead and rapes this guy, has a conference call with Joe Paterno and apparently the athletic director at the time, who knew that Penn State could do conference calls in the athletic department in 1971. That all we knew. What we now know, which we also learned at the time, was that the only corroborating quote-unquote witness for this is Bernard McHugh, who people know in State College know to be a complete insane person, who starred as a whack job in that Happy Valley documentary. And now we now know, Jeff, and this to me was the coup de grace, the cherry of insanity on top of this bullcrap sundae, we now know who the lawyer for the 1971 accusation is. And anyone who's listened to us knows that the best guess on that was going to be one Andrew Shubin of State College. And, yes, we found out last week that's exactly right. So we now have Shubin, McHugh, and Ganim all directly related to this obviously bullcrap story. And back to the Happy Valley documentary, what I want to know is, wow, the Happy Valley documentary people must really feel like dupes, because here they have a documentary film where it stars Andrew Shubin, it stars Bernard McHugh, and yet there is no mention, no implication even, of the 1971 allegation of a rape on Penn State's campus that Joe Paterno was told directly about. How is that possible, Jeff? These must be the worst documentary filmmakers in the history of man to have this bombshell right under their nose and no mention of it. Of course, there's the other possibility, which I think is more likely, even though I'm no fan of the Happy Valley documentary, having known these people quite well and actually having been interviewed to do that film as a director, I think the more logical explanation is that the story isn't in the film because it never happened.
Yeah, you've covered it well. The 70s accusations just truly make no sense whatsoever. Especially if you buy into the narrative that Joe Paterno was interested in protecting his football program. Everything that plays out then after he is informed of the 70s allegations would fly completely in the face of that.
Absolutely. But this is the whole nature of this case, and it's very, very important to understand why this happened, which is exactly, I gotta tell you, it's probably been my best prediction in all of this, and it's partially because I have inside information on this that I can't fully reveal this time, although you're aware of it, Jeff, and that is, how did these allegations come to be? It doesn't take a rocket scientist to understand it. If you're a fake accuser who comes forward and your age is such that your allegation had to have occurred in the early 70s, you have a massive, massive problem when it comes to getting your free money from Penn State. Number one, as people who have been following the news know, you're outside the statute of limitations. Statute of limitations in Pennsylvania is you're 30 years old for civil cases, although they thought they were going to extend that. It doesn't look like they're going to do that retroactively, although they will in the future. But the reality is you're outside the statute of limitations. Number two, the second mile charity, which is integral to the settlements, for reasons that I don't fully understand, but I can assure you that that is one of the most important, if not the most important element in deciding whether or not someone is eligible for that free Penn State money. Were you part of the Second Mile charity? Well, you can't be part of a charity that doesn't start until 1977. If your allegation is in 76 and 71, because that's your age, you know, we all know that, you know, the cutoff here appears to be 15 years old. So now you've got two strikes. So when you got two strikes, what do you got to do? On the third one, you better hit a grand slam home run, to mix the metaphor a bit. And the best grand slam home run is to not only implicate Penn State, but to implicate Joe Paterno. And, of course, since Joe Paterno is dead, it's very easy to say, I told Joe Paterno Penn State will give you money, and there's no way to disprove that. And, of course, at the time of these settlements, no one thought that this level of detail would ever be known, because that was the presumption that they would be able to pay all this money off so that it all goes away, so that we wouldn't be talking about this. Gee, how'd that work out, Jeff?
Well, exactly. And then, John, I want to touch on a couple of other things with you, because I just think the hysteria that that grew out of this, and again, I think this all goes back to the grand jury report and the lie that's told there, because, I mean, initially we were all over Penn State and everybody else involved. My God, how could you be told about anal rape and not do anything about it? And it's because nobody was told anything about anal rape, because that had nothing to do with the allegation. But it was in the grand jury report, which sparked the entire thing. And I think now there's just a hysteria. I don't know if you read Ray Blihar's latest blog, and I know you and he have taken different paths here, and I still think Ray's done a lot of good work, but the hysteria now is at such a point where Rob Lehr, a camp, what was it, camp director, says that he saw immoral things like cross-dressing, where they had for an evening, you had some camp counselors that thought it'd be funny to dress up as women. And now that is getting turned into, well, clearly, how could you have not known that pedophilia was going to be taking place in an organization where men dressed up as women for a skit some night?
Well,
I mean, it's just, it's a witch hunt times 100 here. It's just insane.
What I call it is the big lie. Once you accept that big lie of the grand jury report, as you referred to, then you're very easily duped into believing anything that follows. And this has been the biggest mistake, which I have said numerous times years ago, that the Paterno family has made. In order to be politically correct, they have accepted this notion, embraced this notion. In fact, they've even facilitated this notion with Jim Clemente, who is a fraud, one of the writers of the Paterno Report, who I've spoken to for hours and hours to, and I know him to be a fraud. When the Paterno family accepted and embraced this notion that Jerry Sandusky was a monster, then anything would be believed. Anything about Jerry Sandusky would be believed, no matter how nonsensical, no matter how lacking in logic or evidence. Well, frankly, the Paterno family has now been bitten in the ass by that, because, of course, eventually that was going to come back to mean that anything about Joe Paterno would be believed, and that incentives would be created so that lies would be told about Joe Paterno. Now, I know that certainly in State College, and certainly in some areas of Pennsylvania, a lot of people have had their eyes opened by these most recent allegations, said, wait a minute, this makes no sense. And if these allegations are coming from these accusers, maybe these accusers aren't really credible, which they're not. And so maybe the whole case is a fraud, but it's too little too late, especially when you've got a post-conviction relief situation where you got the same judge who oversaw the original trial overseeing post-conviction relief, having absolutely a huge conflict of interest and no incentive whatsoever to disavow the most important trial of his entire career against 100% of the news media and probably 80% of the public of the state of Pennsylvania. That's never going to happen. So it's all the big lie, and it's all incredibly frustrating. And, you know, I felt it my own self and my own life last week, just to finish the story you and I spoke about previously, about me being charged because I went to a Matt Sandusky event with a ticket in my own name, sat in my seat, did exactly what I was told. I got arrested, charged with a bunch of a complete and utter baloney where I would have faced 9 years in prison. And I was forced, because of the politics in this case, I went back to Pennsylvania, faced a preliminary hearing, and then ended up having all the charges dropped, but they added basically a traffic ticket so that they could claim some semblance of saving face. So I paid a $100 fine to get out of something where I should have been hailed as a hero because I was standing up for constitutional rights and the truth against the guy Matt Sandusky, who's a complete lying fraud and who would never have been felt so threatened about me sitting in the audience for his speaking engagement if he wasn't such an obvious lying fraud. And I'm hoping that somebody out there will put all these pieces together because it's so freaking obvious and it's not even close.
John, what are your thoughts on the Post-Conviction Relief Act and the chances? I understand your comments regarding Judge Cleland and share them. It just seems like they are setting up where Sandusky is going to have to prove the impossible. How are you going to prove that a leak came from the Attorney General's office if you can't get to the Attorney General and the people who received the leak? There's a lot of things in that it just seems like they're setting up, well, yeah, all you have to do is the impossible, and then we'll set you free.
You and I sat together at Cleland's first public hearing on this, and I think we were both very optimistic at that point because it appeared to me as if Cleland got it. I now believe that Cleland is playing a game, and I'm not the only one close to this that believes that. And I have told Jerry Sandusky, you have one job, and your job is to live as long as you possibly can so that this might get into a court situation where you can get a fair hearing, whether that's federal court or what have you. It's not going to be in this particular situation, and it's just human nature. I'm not alleging a massive conspiracy or any even direct corruption. I'm just alleging that human beings are human beings, and they follow their own self-interest. And this is a very political situation. This is all politics. All of it is. And the only value this might have, Jeff, is that it seems to me as if we might be able to shed some light on the McQuarrie episode with regard to Alan Myers.
Yeah.
That's the kid who I've been saying for years, Ray Lee Harsin, you mentioned him, has lied about what his true beliefs are on Alan Myers. I have emails from Ray saying directly he knows Alan Myers was in fact victim number two, but it doesn't fit Ray's politics anymore, so he backed off that, which is why Ray and I no longer communicate, because he's a lying fraud like a lot of other people in this case. But Alan Myers is the victim number two, and there's a very decent chance, although I wouldn't necessarily bet on it, there's a decent chance that the media may be finally forced to acknowledge the existence of Alan Myers and the overwhelming evidence provided by Alan Myers himself that he was never abused by Jerry Sandusky in the McQuarrie episode or any other time by Jerry Sandusky. And from that, the entire case falls apart from there.
Well, it does. Will anybody recognize that? Anybody that needs to recognize it, recognize that is ultimately the question.
Well, you know, we keep trying, and the truth still has to matter. And if it does, I've always said, if the truth matters at all, we're going to find out about it in this case, because there's never been a situation where the truth is more 180 degrees different from the narrative that the elites, especially in the media, want, or in the fairy tale that they want to buy into, because it's obviously false. It's an obvious fairy tale.
FramingPaterno.com is the website.
And we appreciate your dogged pursuit of the truth, John. Appreciate the time this morning.
Thank you, guys. Have a good holiday.
You too.